Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, good. Hey, I'm Brad Green. I'm an engineering director over at Google. I want to thank Scott Hunter for having me here today. It's really nice to be invited. Also like to thank Anders and the rest of the TypeScript team for all of the work we've been doing together. It's exciting stuff. We're going to talk a little bit about where Angular is today and where it's going. But before I do, I want to just revisit a little bit of Angular's history. By the way, who in the audience has used Angular before? Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. That's awesome. Okay, so some of you know what I'm talking about. That's easier for me. When we started with our lovely yellow and purple website, maybe some of you remember that, we were really focused on building a framework that works to really reduce the amount of boilerplate that developers like you guys have to write in terms of, you know, reducing it through less code, through declarative programming, through directives, through things like data binding, building some structure so you don't have to start from scratch every time, building my MVC architecture, and then trying to make testing a first-class citizen with tools like Karma and Protractor. In our next phase, and a lot of you helped with this, and thank you, by the way, building out the ecosystem in terms of everything people need to build end-to-end applications, with critical infrastructure for things like accessibility, for building widgets, like our material design widgets, and many, many other widget systems. And then through partnerships for the rest of the tools and libraries that you need to build Angular applications. Now today, we're just about on the edge of going to Angular 2. And by the way, thank you for the feedback on the naming. You're right, we screwed it up. We don't have any marketing people on the Angular team, actually. It's just engineers. But yeah, you know, we live and learn. But we're excited to be here. We're not only focused on building something that's dramatically more performant, simpler, has a greater commitment to tooling, but also is what I'd call a complete platform that allows you to use multiple languages, multiple templating syntaxes, and have multiple rendering targets. And I'll talk a little bit more about what that means later. Just to visit a little bit where we are in Angular 1, we have built this architecture that has actually gone a lot farther than we thought it was. We started back in 2009, almost 6 years ago. And today, we've got over 1.1 million developers, to our best measure. And we measure this by the number of unique people coming to angularjs.org every month. So thank you guys for being part of that. That's awesome. That's wonderful. If you want to go check out some of these things, and some of you may have built some of these sites, we just switched to a new sort of testimonial site, madewithangular.com, where you can find things from all over the world, all kinds of different companies building with Angular. This is actually a community contribution from a guy named Lalaith Polipetti. We've got to thank him for this. While there's, you know, many of you I know have actually contributed to Angular Core, there's over 1,000 people who have actually contributed to Angular itself. There's lots of different ways to contribute, and this is one of the really cool ones. A lot of these things actually come from Google projects. In every product area at Google, we have examples of where people or Google developers build in Angular. In ads with things like analytics, DoubleClick, in search with search trends and search history, YouTube's video manager, and even for our TV interfaces for Chromecast is built in Angular. So a lot of cool stuff. In Google, we're going to be on Angular 1 for a long time, but still, we'd like to get people moving to Angular 2 as we can. What we've said is that we're actually going to support the Angular 1 platform strongly until the vast majority of folks have moved to Angular 2. And we measure this, again, by number of people coming to the different websites. It's no surprise Angular 1 is still the king because we have not even gotten to the beta point at Angular 2. We are a little surprised that 7% of the traffic is already going to the Angular 2 site at angular.io. So, to date, in support of Angular 1, we've had 32 releases with bug fixes, feature improvements, performance improvements. We'll continue to do that. A lot of the work, however, is mostly on the Angular 2 side, because we're getting very close. The way we're addressing this, though, is some of the features we're announcing or that we're going to be releasing actually are going to happen for both Angular 1 and Angular 2 via the same library. A couple examples. The component router, so if you used Angular 1, if you used the router, you know it was very simplistic, didn't handle a lot of the cases that you need to get to. So at Angular 2, we're really trying to fix this, where the new component router handles things from the mobile examples all the way through the largest desktop applications with things like nested routes, parallel routes, and modals, and even popovers like we see in mobile applications. If you're building big apps, you need to write it in the language where people are using it. We're building a new i10n and L10n library that has high performance, where most of the work actually happens offline, so you don't have to take a hit on your site. And it integrates well where you have an external translation service. Make sure that that can work well with your workflow. In Angular 1, if you've used the ng-animate facilities, it's pretty cool stuff. We actually think it could be even cooler, where in the next version, we're going to have programmatic control over sequencing and staggering. You're going to be able to do these really complex choreographies with very little code. And you're going to do these parent and child animations that are really simple and versatile. That's pretty cool stuff. There was a talk on this a couple weeks ago. You can learn more about it if you go to Angular Connect. So on to Angular 2. We've pushed the Angular 1 architecture as far as we can. And so though maybe we named it wrong, we think we're actually doing something really interesting here, where we've tried to take all the lessons that we learned about building Angular 1 and open up the future in terms of the architecture. I think the thing that I'm most proud of is our focus on speed and dramatically changing our ability to move this forward. But when we say speed, there's no one thing that you can focus on and just like, oh yeah, check the box, I got it, all done. So we looked at all the different areas we should be focusing on, from initial load through to compiling the templates, to rendering it, to the constant usage of the application where you continue to re-render what the user has already seen. So in terms of loading, we've been working with, again, some external contributors to build a service called Angular Universal that runs in Node.js and allows you to do the first-time render of the application in pure HTML and CSS. So Angular actually runs on a server, runs the application headless without any browser, without anything like PhantomJS running, and is able to render that first view incredibly quickly for an almost instant load. Angular then comes down later, makes your application live. Also great for SEO, for being able to render a static version of your website for the crawlers to see. In Angular 1, the compile actually happened at multiple points throughout your application lifecycle, where you would compile, render. In Angular 2, we've moved all of that compilation to the front so that we can make sure that, A, it's faster to begin with, we do less work in it, and that we never have to do it again. We've gotten some good performance improvements on this. We're about to release a version, though, where we move that compile phase into a build step, so we actually don't even have to do it. And this not only makes that startup three times faster, but it dramatically makes the library itself smaller, because we no longer have to ship that code that does compilation. This is coming out soon. For rendering, one of the big things we do in Angular is this change detection. We have this new system, what was called Fast, and Mishko renamed it Ultra Fast. I don't know if that's too audacious. But the core thing in there is that he focused on making sure that all the code that generates can be inlined by JavaScript virtual machines, and it runs incredibly fast. And it's actually 10 times faster than what we do in Angular 1. For even more headroom, we take advantage of the sort of push nature of some of these data structures, like observables with the rx.js library, or immutables with the immutable.js. And then lastly, we've looked a lot at the memory profile to make sure we're very efficient, we use very little memory, and so that as we're rendering, there should be very little garbage collection go on, that we can handle the biggest data sets in your applications. Then lastly, for re-rendering, when a user is, okay, I've loaded the view, what are all the things we need to do? These are things like virtual scrolling, change between routes, and re-rendering things people have seen. We actually keep the data structure around that we've previously used so that we can re-render it very quickly. And I'll show you some graphs on this in a little bit. So to summarize, if you were to port an existing Angular 1 application today into Angular 2, what you would see, if you take advantage of all these features, near instant rendering for that first time load, compile being three times faster than even what you can see in Angular 2 today, rendering be about 2.5 times faster, and re-rendering for virtual scrolling and whatnot, 4.2 times faster. You might also wonder, well, great against Angular 1, how does this compare against other frameworks out there? And there's this company called Meteor, who does a server-side, client-side way you can run the same code on across multiple platforms. And they built this application where they could test out multiple frameworks. And so they built this app. You're kind of looking at a visualization of it, where you can change the data set size. So you can see how does a framework scale. And then they wrote this actually in multiple frameworks and ran it with this tool called BenchPress that we wrote, but it's actually framework agnostic. You can use it to test any framework. And they looked at the results. Now, the graphs we're seeing here aren't the actual app rendering time, but it's just the framework code itself. So how much overhead does the framework add to your code? There's DOM rendering and there's your business logic. You can still make apps slow. But just in terms of the total overhead, for the initial render, Angular adds very little overhead compared to other frameworks. And then for that re-render case, you can see that it's incredibly flat. For these scenarios where you've loaded the application, your users are going to experience some very, very good performance. If you want, you can actually go and add your own framework to the set. It's a very simple app. You can rewrite it. There's the blog post here. You can get at all the code and go check out. By the way, I'll give you a link to this deck with all of these links at the end, so you don't have to worry about writing these things down. But you can go add any framework you want to it and rerun the bench press tests and find out how do different things compare. It's pretty cool. So we actually think there's some more places we can push, and one of them I'm really excited about is called web workers. Now, how many people know what web workers are? Almost everybody. Who's used web workers? A couple, fewer people. It's actually hard, right? Because you don't have access to a lot of things. You don't have access to the DOM. You've got this little narrow data pipe for passing data back to the main UI thread. But it's kind of exciting because for high-performance applications, you can get access to other processor cores. So if you've got a mobile phone with maybe a lot of processor cores, you might want to take advantage of it for desktop apps. We think it's actually going to be useful for a couple of different things. You know, high processing scenarios, video, photo, audio, other number crunching scenarios. If you wanted to sandbox some untrusted plugins in your app, this would be a great way to do it. We also can see where you could run headless integration tests, very high speed, without having to run a browser, also for mobile, I kind of mentioned. I want to demo a couple things. Now, demos are dangerous, so let's see what happens. All right. Actually, I'm going to bring up Firefox. And I've got this app that does this really useful thing. I'll make it a little bigger here. Where I compute the largest prime factor of a number in a scrolling table. Now, I didn't pay attention to my CS 101. I forgot that was expensive. And so, you know, I just let my users scroll through this. And it gets really slow because this is computationally intensive. Now, you can encounter this, various things you do. And you probably have come to a web page at some point in your life where you've got this spinner go on. You might have even have it seen it crash the page you're on. And now we are basically crashed here. I can't close it. I can almost do nothing here. So I'm going to force quit. All right, go away, Firefox. Let's try again. OK, so what we've done with web workers is, don't restore that. OK, that would just be a pain. What we've done with web workers is we made it so that almost purely through configuration, you can run most of your app and most of Angular, maybe all of your app, and most of Angular inside a browser. And so I'll bring up the app again, except this time I'm going to run the web worker version. Same app. But no matter how, like, it doesn't actually get faster in terms of computing the numbers, but the scrolling stays completely fluid, no matter how much computation is going on inside my application. I have one other kind of fanciful demo let me start this up. Start the server. And I'm going to go to this app here. OK, now what's happening here is I've got this nice to-dos app. And it's running actually on the server and just projecting the results onto the browser. And so what happens with no changes to my code, I've written no WebSocket code whatsoever. the data actually appears on across the boundary. In this case, we've put the web worker boundary across machines. The interesting thing here is I could actually test my app, my single app, with the same state across multiple versions. Here, I'll bring up Safari as well. Let's reload this guy. Okay, so exactly the same app. No matter where I edit it, I get the same stuff. And I could actually see maybe different effects on different apps. So maybe I tried a really big string here. Like, oh, well, look in Firefox. Things work out a little bit differently. So on any devices that I'm using, I can now use this as a cool testing facility. And for me, as an app developer, the only thing different I had to do was a little bit of the configuration about how the Angular app gets bootstrapped. All right. Excited about the WebWorker stuff. On to the other bits. So we actually want to make learning Angular 2 simpler than learning Angular 1. Now, it's going to be different. And what we found is that in hackathons, if you didn't know Angular 1 already, you have an easier time learning Angular 2. Because easy and simple are different things. But we focus a lot on the templating syntax in particular so that you have less to learn. So in Angular 1, we do all of this work with directives to make it possible for you to manipulate data and to build your UIs by using directives. In Angular 2, we have some powerful syntax for doing data binding and event binding, where you can do a whole lot without knowing too much more. So for properties, so in Angular 1, we bound to attributes. And you can think of attributes as just being sort of the initial state of the DOM. But properties are that live state, so that as my application updates, we get the updates to propagate. So I can bind to properties with this nice square bracket syntax. If I wanted to bind to the first name field into my input's value, I can just do this. For events, similarly, I can use the parentheses in my template to capture the click event, and then I can pass the data structure I get from that click event to any function that I want. Between these two, we actually drop the need for 43 different directives that we have in Angular 1. So there's actually less code for us to maintain in Angular 2 and a lot less for you guys to learn. For two-way data binding, we can combine these two syntaxes for an easy-to-explain sort of extension with the familiar ng model that we have in Angular 1. All right, another thing, way we want to make this simpler. In Angular 1, we notice that when people have written a controller, they often write a template-style directive along with it. And what we let you do in Angular 2 is combine these two together in what we call a component. And we can, again, describe these very simply. Here's an example in today's JavaScript ES5, where I can create a function with the controller portion of this. In this case, I'm calling it my display component, where I set up some state. And then I create some annotations, which would be the old directive bit from Angular 1, where I just say, hey, this is going to match an element called display, wherever you use a display in your template, you're going to get one of these. And here's the template that's going to be a paragraph with my name and data bind to some value for my name. We can make this even a little simpler by using some TypeScript and ES6 syntax, where using an annotation, I could specify the selector and the template right together, easy to read. And then using a class, do the display component. In Angular 1, you could data bind to any piece of data from anywhere in your application. This was kind of cool and maybe a natural way to do things. But it actually caused some problems in terms of debugging and some cycles. So in Angular 2, we have a unidirectional data flow, which means that the data always propagates from parents down to its children, and it's has some nice properties. It's a little bit faster, always nice. Easier to debug because you always know where the data changes are coming from. And it works better in functional reactive scenarios with libraries like Rx or Redux. And we're excited about some of that stuff too. We want to continue focusing not just on simplicity, but that you have a really good end-to-end experience by making folks more productive. Now, you can use almost any one of the 100 or so compiled to JavaScript languages that you have in JavaScript in the world. But we think there's a couple that make most sense for folks. I want to talk through a couple examples. So you might want to say, look, I'm going to stick with what I do in Angular 1 now, which is ES5. That's an easy pick because there's no compilation required. It's something that a lot of developers know. It might be easier to recruit people to work on code with you. But we know that there's a lot of other interesting things coming in ES6. So if you can get over the little bit of pain it is to set up tools to get your compilation going, we think ES6 is probably an attractive target with features like class syntax, which we just saw, things like the fat arrow syntax, standards for I knew I was going to forget something during the presentation. Standards for promises, and then cool stuff like the spread operator. We actually wrote all of Angular 2 in this new language from Microsoft called TypeScript. And who's tried out TypeScript? A bunch of us. Okay. Oh, that's more than most audiences I go to. Okay. TypeScript, I think, is just catching on. So the experience we had in Angular, when we moved from plain JavaScript, ES5, to TypeScript, the first thing was that we actually found a bunch of bugs that we had not identified with our copious unit tests. So that was pretty cool. We also had our folks saying that it became much easier to navigate our code base because now you had type information where IDEs could really help us move around. And then lastly, it's been much easier to do big refactorings in the system because the IDEs, again, can do a lot more help than they could before. One of the other ways to think about this, though, is that ES6 is actually just a superset of ES5, meaning all of the ES5 code you've ever written works in ES6, and similarly for TypeScript. So no matter where you want to be or where your customers want to be along this line, if you're using a TypeScript toolchain, it's pretty cool because you can mix and match and add features a little bit at a time. And you don't have to bite it all off at once. I said we were going to commit to tools. There's a couple ones that I'll talk about here. One is we find that when using like a language compiler and the rest of my gulp or grunt tasks, there's a lot to set up. We'd like to make this a lot easier. And so we've built the start of a command line interface for Angular. I was going to demo it, but Jules told me it was took too long. We can do that later if we have some time. But you can go check it out yourself. It's pretty simplistic at this point. The intent, though, is that it takes you all the way from initial scaffolding to building components and services all the way through to deployment to make all your testing, all of the things you would normally have to download, set up, and configure easier. You can go check it out. Another tool that we've built for Angular 1, how many people have used Batarang? Yeah, had a lot of promise, but you know we haven't always paid attention to the quality. Almost 300,000 people have installed it, but the reviews have not been great. So in Angular 2, I want to make sure that it has somebody taking good care of it. I started talking with some of the folks at wrangle.io, and I know Yuri, who leads it as a CTO. He really understands what we're trying to do in Angular 2, and I think they're going to do a great job. And so they volunteered to build the next version of Batarang for Angular 2. The code name for this right now is Batarangle, of course. I don't know if they'll keep with it. But in any event, they're going to be focused on doing performance analysis of live Angular 2 applications, make it easy to navigate from your live running app into the template and into the code, and then, again, make debugging much easier. And even though it's very early, you can see that for Angular 2 apps, they can already draw the component tree, allow you to navigate that, and get more information on it. This is available also. You go to wrangle.io/batarangle. You can install it, submit issues, and maybe even help them out. Last thing I want to talk about in Angular 2 is this idea of learning one application framework and building cross-platform. Where in Angular 1, we can kind of do it. We actually really wanted to get in and help on Angular 2 so that you can build desktop apps as we do today, mobile web apps, and native mobile apps as well. So on mobile web, again, in Angular 1, we haven't really helped out that much. But in Angular 2, we're going to start off with a beautiful set of widgets and material design that are intended to go from desktop to tablet to mobile phone and to work equally well across all these environments. We've talked about Angular Universal, which gives us the ability to have really fast initial renderings. And then web workers, which, again, gives me access to more of the processor cores so that I can keep the UI fluid no matter how much processing or garbage collection is going on. In native mobile, where we install apps on the device, we've had some good fortune to work with teams like Ionic and Onsen UI to build against Cordova for hybrid web UIs. And with the architectural changes we've made to Angular 2, we've been able to work with teams who build native UIs using NativeScript and React Native. I'll focus on a couple of these. So Ionic has been one of the few teams we've partnered with while building Angular 2 to ensure that we can come out simultaneously. On the Angular 1 version of Ionic, they've had a ton of adoption, where they've had almost over a million applications written on Angular 1. And again, this is being deployed to both the Android Play Store and the iOS App Store. On Angular 2, they've had some nice things to say about dramatically improving the performance, about some of the exciting things that we're doing with web workers, and just being easier place for them to build on top of, because we've structured it more like a traditional GUI architecture. And then lastly, they like how there's actually less Angular that folks have to write in the end system. It basically just vanilla JavaScript. They have a ton of new features that they're building, and you can go check it out now at ionic.io/2, their next version that runs on Angular 2. Now, if you actually want to build an app that has completely native UI, one of the paths is through NativeScript. And NativeScript allows you to write apps in JavaScript that build using iOS, Android, and Windows mobile UI components. And just like we saw in the code earlier, you have something that looks very, very similar, where we can define components, where we set up which directives they use, the template, and a class, all using either plain JavaScript or TypeScript. I have a little example here of an app they built. You can actually go download this, where the scrolling is all happens native, very slick and fast. You can use swipe for things like dismissing or for doing favoriting. And we notice, oh, well, we have the British spelling of favorites here. Maybe we'd want to change this. And so if I'm actually developing natively for iOS or Android, it takes quite a bit of time for me to make a change, recompile it, reinstall the app. In NativeScript, I can do this live. I can find the place in the code where I want to change it, go start up the live sync service, just make the change and save, and my app just reloads. So pretty cool stuff. All right. Sorry, say that again. I don't know, but ask me again at the end, and I think we'll have some time for Q&A. So what we saw there was, okay, look, in Angular 1, we take an HTML template and data, and we make a DOM view out of it. We do exactly the same thing in Angular 2, but what we just saw was they actually don't use HTML. There's an XML template format. We've decoupled this in Angular 2, so we no longer have to be bound to a particular template format. We're no longer also bound to the DOM. We're rendering to native application views. I would love to see somebody else do something like maybe you want to do a WebGL template in declarative syntax where we merge with data and make a 3D view. We'll be able to do more of these things in the future. I'd like to bring Jules Kremer up to talk about how folks can get to Angular 2. We've built this thing we're excited about, but we know the transition is an important critical part. Here you go.
Am I on?
Yes.
Yes, awesome. So hey, I'm Jules. As Brad said, actually you didn't say that this time.
Nope, sorry.
As Brad did not tell you, I recently joined the Angular team a couple months ago after walking out of this building 5 years ago as a .NET developer. So it's pretty cool to be here as a Googler. It's overwhelming, actually. So I joined the Angular team to focus on our external developers and the ecosystem that's required to make you successful in using Angular 2. And when I met Brad and the Angular team, I hadn't really stayed in touch with the developer community. So the first thing I did was reach out to some of my dear developer friends who are all MVPs. And I said, should I join this thing called Angular? And they all said, absolutely. But the thing you have to do if you join this team is make the upgrade work, because we're terrified. And so if you're like them and you have thousands of lines of code written in Angular 1 and apps that are in production and that your customers depend on, you might feel a little bit like this fish. How am I going to get from point A to point B and still be really successful? And if you're like my other MVP friends, you saw the vast Twitter stream over the last year that was sort of this big blaring, NG2 is not going to be backwards compatible with NG1. Oh my god, what am I going to do? So at Angular U, Mishko, who's the father of Angular, kind of said, you know what, this upgrade's going to be boring. And no one really believed him. So let me tell you how the upgrade looks. It's pretty easy. Let's say you have an app, and it's all in Angular 1. And you have your components, and your directives, and your controllers, all in Angular 1. And you say, OK, I want to upgrade to Angular 2. Well, we have this new thing called ng upgrade. And it's a simple library you can drop in. And with ng upgrade, you can actually choose how to upgrade your application. So it's not going to be a complete refactor. It's not a big bang conversion. So let's just say you want to get started. We've got this app in ng1. And let's just say we want to start with the left nav. So we can convert the left nav into ng2. And everything else on this page is still running Angular 1. And say that was pretty cool and you were successful with it and you've heard all these great performance improvements that Brad just talked about. You really want to take advantage of them. So you change all of the controller's directives and everything else inside your main view. And now that's all running Angular 2. And then you change the main view itself. And finally you change your top nav and everything is Angular 2 except your bootstrap. So change your bootstrap, take out ng upgrade, boom, you've got an Angular 2 app that you wrote on your timeline while you're still shipping to production. However you want to do it. So Mishko called that boring. I call it kind of cool. We also have a sandbox here. You'll get the link to it, so you don't have to copy it down if you want to go play around with some of the samples that we have out there. And the second thing I had to look at was, what's this ecosystem? And how do we make you more successful in that ecosystem with Angular 2? So when I took the job a couple months ago, I ran this Built With report. And basically, the Built With report shows the internet adoption of Angular across the web. And I started talking to the companies, and honestly, that's what I did. I went to Built With, started calling people, and they let me in the door. And when I talked to these big companies, some of the biggest companies in the world, and some of them are probably your customers, actually, I learned two things. I learned that first, as Angular has been adopted for internet sites, it's been equally adopted for internal sites. And we don't have the telemetry to figure out how many of those there are, but I'd guess there's lots. And then I also discovered that this open source thing has really taken off in the enterprise. And with it, it's sort of been a transition in how big companies adopt and use technology. And so I'm going to get to that and why I think it's so important to us later. And then I went looking for people. Who should I talk to? How do I need to make partnerships? Where are we missing? And the first people I found were old friends here at Microsoft. So most of you are aware, as Brad talked about the collaboration with TypeScript, but it goes deeper than that with Microsoft and Google. We're working with Visual Studio Code. I like the name. to make sure that your developer experience with Angular inside of VS Code is great. We're also working with ASP.NET, and if you stick around for the next session, you'll hear a lot more about Angular 2 with ASP.NET. That's coming out soon. And my old team, the Office developer team, has done a lot of investment in Angular 1 and has committed to Angular 2 as well, with things like their UMAN Yo Office scaffolding that basically hooks all of your stuff up if you're building Office client add-ins. And something I found out a couple weeks ago, you can actually write Angular apps for Office and they run cross-platform. That's pretty cool because I used to be an Office developer and I know that that was not possible before. But we know it's not just Microsoft or even any other big player. It's about the tools and libraries you use in Angular 1 and making sure that they're ready for Angular 2. So we've worked with people like WebStorm, if you prefer that IDE. We've worked with UI Router and the UI Bootstrap team. We've worked with Andrew Connell, who's a fellow MVP of U, who built Office Fabric UI, which is like the material design for Office. And then the folks at Telerik to make sure Kendo UI and lots more. But we also heard, or I heard, that learning Angular was hard. So we've talked to a lot of different companies, making sure that those companies will have training and courses so you can learn this thing called Angular 2, with people like John Papa, who's in the audience and has helped us build courses and best practices, Pluralsight, Wrangle.io, Egghead. They will all have things coming out very soon, if not already, for Angular 2. And then finally, it doesn't matter how good your app is if it won't run on the platforms your customers are interested in. So we will support iOS, we will support Android 4.1 and above, and all the evergreen browsers like Safari, Chrome, Firefox, and Microsoft Edge, and IE. But there's one really cool number on the screen, and I wonder if any of you notice it.
Nine.
Yes. It kind of blew my next slide, but yes. So Angular 2 will support IE9. And when I first started with the team, I basically was doing a bunch of research. And I came back to Brad, and I said, I'm a little scared, because I keep hearing that IE9 is a requirement for big enterprise companies, but I don't see it on the supported list. And so we had some talks, and this is where I think the open source thing is mind-blowingly cool, which is Amadeus, who's a very big enterprise company. If you're not from Europe, you might not know them, but they're like the Sabre of Europe. And Amadeus has a very large IE9 requirement. They also have two full-time developers, Pavel and Mark, who work almost entirely on Angular Core. And so Pavel and Mark said, well, this is so important to us that we're going to commit to making it happen for Angular 2. So this code was not actually written by Angular Core at Google. It was written by Amadeus and contributed back, which is why I wanted to leave you with how can you contribute back. Brad mentioned some other work that's been contributed back, and we all need your expertise. You guys are a long time in this industry, and I think it's really important for us all to embrace this open source thing. So I hope to see how you contribute.
Okay, the question I always get is, when is this thing going to ship? I never know. But I think we're really close.
Hey, we're under NDA, it's okay.
Yeah, I think they're broadcasting this live, so let's see what I say. The reason I think we're really close is not only have we been working with external folks like Ionic and NativeScript and the TypeScript team, but we've got a couple customers inside Google who have been building on Angular 2. One of the teams is mine, the Green Tea team. You've not heard about it. It's an internal tool. It's kind of like, it's our internal CRM application for all of our ads folks. There's about 70 developers with about 300,000 lines of code and over 500 components in Angular 1. They've been porting to Angular 2. They're going to launch at the end of Q1, pretty far along. The Google Fiber team actually just got approved for launch. We ported this from Angular 1 to Angular 2, and we saw those speed and size improvements that we talked about in the beginning part of the slide deck. Also in Angular 2, I'm really excited that we've got our biggest internal customer ever for the Angular team, where Google AdWords is building on top of Angular 2. We've got hundreds of developers and millions of lines of code. And they've been really great partners for us, pushing us, particularly in performance and in terms of developer ergonomics for the APIs. That's very exciting for me. All right. Where we're at. We're still in alpha, but we're fast, simple, productive, and available now. We're not too far away from beta. Two things I want to do. One, finish the docs. There are some docs out there. We'll take a look at what that is. Close a couple P1 issues. There's about 10 big ones and about 30 smaller ones. I want to get the 10 big ones done at least. It's not going to be too far past that where we get to final. Based on your feedback, we definitely want to hear from you how this is all working out and some more of that development happening at Google. We want to launch a couple products on it. If you do want to get involved, we have a new set of docs that we've pretty much just completed. We've got a cheat sheet where you can really orient yourself to the new syntax quickly. We've got an easily searchable new API guide. And there's a new tutorial by John Papa, one of your fellow MVPers. John, are you in the audience? Way back there somewhere. Oh, hey, John. Hey, thanks for this. Awesome stuff, where you can get a tour of all of the pieces of Angular 2. Okay, thanks so much. You can get at the slides, g.co/ng/mvp-angular. I don't know, do we have any time for questions? Yes, no, there's nobody here to tell me no, so I guess we do. We had one question about it during the mobile native section. What was your question?
It's similar to how the accelerator does the native aspect.
Okay, how the accelerator does the native aspect. There have been a couple different takes at this. Let me describe exactly how it works, and then yes, it is similar. So they've got a JavaScript VM that runs with a interface to create the native elements. And they do this through Reflection, both on Android, iOS, and then Windows Mobile. Yeah.
Did you have access to cookies and stuff like that?
So it's a native app. There are no cookies. So there's, like, basically, you, like, imagine you're in Node.js, right? There's no cookies because there's no browser. Yeah. But you do have access to all of the native APIs. Okay. Other questions? Nope. Get off the stage. Okay. Got it.
A million lines of code for AdWords, was that Angular.js code, or was that?
No. So AdWords is currently written in the Google Web Toolkit. So they're not porting from Angular. They're porting from their previous version.
Are you guys shipping any templates, or are you guys just relying on the community and stuff?
So for templates for starter apps, we are building the CLI, which will help scaffold particular templates for your application. We've also started talking about building a reference application to help people figure out how to architect what does a big app actually look like. And then if you've got ideas or other things we need, please let me know.
Big one and a small one?
Either, yeah.
Both of them.
Yeah, both of them. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
What are the things with the CLI do? You mentioned
you can't use code, but... Okay. Yeah, the idea with the CLI is that you should use it through the entire development process, from building a small app to, you know, getting it going. So the idea is you install one thing, and it gives me, like, if I'm using TypeScript, it'll install TypeScript for me, or ES6. For doing my, you know, minification for deployment, for, like, all of the build things that I would normally configure Gulp or Grunt or whatever my build tool of choice is, should do those things. Should also create skeleton bits for components. I want a new component. You say ng generate component and the name of your component. Scaffold that out, including tests, you know, all of those type of tasks, and including all the way through to deployment. So why should we build a new CLI instead of staying on Yeoman? We looked at using Yeoman. We invested in Yeoman for a long time. There's some architectural flaws that we didn't think we could fix. And instead, we've got a partnership with the Ember team, where we're building on both Gulp and the part of the Ember CLI that's called Broccoli for doing the rest of it. Yeah, over here. Yeah.
Is that going to be that important? The last time I checked, from January, that won't be supportable on one.
Yeah, IE9 not supported, but yet some of our customers say we have to. You know, it's really up to you guys. Like, we want to do what's necessary. Some people still have contracts that say they must support IE9, particularly government contracts, and so some folks just can't get away from it. Yeah. So how does the rendering that we have compare with React Virtual DOM? So React Virtual DOM, you write to this virtual DOM, and then it does a diff of what's actually in the DOM. In Angular, we don't need to go through that step. We actually only diff the model, and we propagate only those model changes that have come across. And so one of the differences we notice there are actually many different systems that use this DOM diffing technique. It's actually quite a lot more memory efficient because we don't have to create all these strings for the virtual DOM and then go read the DOM and compare. So there's a lot of extra work we just don't have to do. It's more efficient also for the web worker and the server-side rendering scenario also because there's less data to shove across the wire. It's not a DOM diff. It's just commands like change the property on this DOM node or repeat a copy of this.
Aren't you afraid that with ng upgrade or a lot of customers will end up with like Frankenstein applications, a lot of Angular 1 stuff still there and Angular 2? Because in all honesty, to rewrite the stuff from 1 to 2 is not as easy as just adding the ng upgrade to your application.
So aren't we afraid that people will end up with half and half Angular 1 and Angular 2 apps? Yes, I am afraid of this. We really want to make it attractive for you to move to Angular 2. Some things you won't get, though, is you won't get server-side pre-rendering until you're fully Angular 2. You also won't get web workers until you're fully Angular 2. Okay. So we're hoping some of these things actually continue to drive people. You'll get the speed upgrades, all of the other niceness. But yeah, it's a worry. I'll take any advice.
Is there a way to use web workers? Web workers does not exist on IE9.
Correct. Only IE10 and up for web workers.
So can I write code that works on both?
Yes. So the deal is if you write for web workers, it will actually run without them. It just won't take advantage of the web worker scenario.
Okay.
Yep. That's why it's configuration only. You have to bootstrap it differently. So you'll have to detect IE9 and send them the one that's bootstrapped appropriately. Maybe we can figure out some clever system that can auto detect and bootstrap, but that's the idea. More questions? Okay, awesome. Thank you guys for having me. This has been awesome. We'll talk to you later. Please let me know if we can be helpful.